And now, the Sandhills' number one morning show. Mornings with the Leader Man. Here on Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB. And heard and seen around the world at talk973.com.
The best part of waking up is waking up with us.
Rise and shine, Sleeping Beauty.
Do you know what today is?
Have you got any idea?
Today is National All or Nothing Day.
All or nothing.
It's all or nothing.
All or nothing.
Well, let's think about that.
Think positive, think positive.
Right. Well, let's get this show on the road then, shall we?
Good morning, Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB. Welcome back to the most listened to program in all of the Sand Hills. It's time once again for Mornings with the Leader Man. I am Steve Leader Adams, along with John Zumwalt this morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Don't forget, of course, we're being heard and seen around the world on our audio stream. That's available to you at our website at talk973.com or talk1041.com or weeb990.com. Top right-hand corner of the page has the icons. Just click on that. You're listening that quick. Weather's going to be hot. Look for partly cloudy today, 94 for a high. Tonight, 72, and tomorrow, mostly sunny and 95. Right now, around the Sand Hills, winds are calm. Pressure is 3018, dew point 72, humidity 81%. It is sunny and 78 degrees currently here at Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB. All right, it is 8:33 past the hour, and John has a special guest this hour. Good morning, John.
Good morning again, and yes, we do have a very special guest. I think it's someone that all of you know. He's a former congressman. He's also a former pastor. I believe he served in the Congress from 2015 to 21. He had three terms. Got a lot of fans in Moore County. Matter of fact, Congressman Keith insisted I say hello to you this morning. Let me introduce our guest, Mark Walker. Good morning, Congressman Walker.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for the opportunity to be with you guys today. And I like that kind of play in there that you guys are number one in the Sandhills. That's impressive.
Well, you're going to have to say hello to Keith, even if you don't remember him, because you're going to kill me if you don't.
Well, Steve, Keith, hope you're doing well. Hope you're ministering to these two guys that we're talking today. You know, everybody has a ministry outreach project, so maybe this one's yours.
It might well be. Let's get right to it. You're running against a pretty tough couple of guys, and we know who they are. We're going to, by the way, we'll be having everyone on at one time or another, but Dale Falwell, who's the state treasurer, brings a lot of experience, and then, of course, the very popular in Moore County as well, Mark Robinson, who brings some strength. So you'll also be running against a Democrat, one that we hope you or someone can just squash, and that's, of course, Josh Stein, the current attorney general. We don't need those folks in office. So can you address, just for a minute, before we get to some of your talking points, can you address the field that you'll be running against, please?
No, I do think we have some some solid candidates. I think Mr. Falwell, I have nothing ill to say, certainly. I think as a treasurer, he has done a good job with Mr. Robinson. I think as lieutenant governor, I would, you know, just to be transparent with you. I'm not sure what the list of credential is. Certainly, we are all inspired with some of his speeches. But as a governor, it takes a different skill set. It has to be more than just the rhetoric. You have to know how to lead in results. And if you have really no experience or background in doing so, I think it makes it a little bit more challenging. But the larger picture here that we can't ignore, and Moore County, I mean, when it comes to kicking Democratic behind, you guys do it as good as anybody. But we have to remember that in North Carolina, only 30% of the registered voters are Republican. So we have to have somebody that wins the unaffiliated votes. And if you look at the data right now, in 2022, Republicans won the unaffiliated votes by 9%. Right now, the lieutenant governor is down 17 points among the unaffiliated or independent female voters. You can't win a general election, and we are facing Josh Stein. Josh Stein is not another Roy Cooper. He is much more in the mold of Gavin Newsom. He is a believer when it comes to this radical progressive left. And for me, this is about one question: who's the most conservative, who's the most qualified, who's the most experienced, but also who is the best candidate to beat Josh Stein. And we feel very strong over the next 6 or 7 months that we're going to make that case.
Well, we've definitely got to beat Josh Stein. That's absolutely a given. And as a very Republican county, and you're right, these unaffiliated, they have a huge voice, and we do have to win them over. I would like to talk with you, Congressman, about some of the top issues in Moore County, because that's what our listeners care about. And I think the number one thing that tops the issues here is education. And it's actually something that the governor has been very hands-on about, as well as his Josh Stein, the attorney general, who should be taking care of us and is not. But I don't want to talk about right now about the critical race theory and things like that. I would like to talk about the failures that we're having in our schools. And by the way, we've got a wonderful school board. They're addressing this in spite of some of the fractures we see. But I wanted you to, if you would, talk about reading and writing and math scores and things like that, and where you stand, where you really do stand on working with our DPI and folks to bring these things up and forget out of all these social issues. Or is that what you want to do?
That's it. No, you just touched on something very important, and this is where, as Republicans, I think we get our lunch handed to us sometimes by the Democrats. We're over here playing checkers, and they're playing chess. And it is important to talk about, you know, the culture, the social things. But what's the plan? How do we win? That's where we've got to talk about that more. And specifically in education, it's number one on what we are calling our emphasis or our platform. Because here's the thing: every other issue that we talk about is just treating the symptoms. And until we can reform education, we're not going to make the progress, because what we're doing is we're producing a group generation, if you will, that believe that America is inherently racist, inherently evil. And until you're able to get in there and change the tide and make sure that our children are properly educated, and I'll give you an example. I was doing a patriotic production not too long ago, and a gentleman came up to me, an older gentleman. I could see he had a book in his hand. He was a World War II veteran, and he had a history book from his great-granddaughter. It had several chapters on different social things, but there was only one paragraph on World War II. And to be able to make sure that we're teaching our children this, I led the D.C. Opportunities Scholarship Program in Congress. And basically what that is to make sure that we have educational freedom. Congress, as you know, kind of has jurisdiction over D.C., that parents could have the authority and the right to pick and choose what school that they believe their children would be able to go to. In fact, I yielded my 5 minutes in speaking that day to a mother, because she was able to change the trajectory of their family because they were able to pick the school. Not a single Democrat voted for it. But parental choice, educational freedom, the reason why that's so important to the heart of your question, Steve, is because you can then make sure that the school is being held accountable for the efforts that they're doing, not just what they're teaching, but how they're teaching, which is going to be very crucial for North Carolina. We've got a great world-class community college system. We'll get to that maybe a little bit later. But when it comes to our children, to make sure they're properly educated, we have to reform it from bottom up, because we're not getting the results that's important to us.
Well, Congressman, I hope you'll forgive me. And I'll be asking the other two the same question, but those are all things that are wonderful, and they sound good, and they are good. But what does that mean? I'll give you one example. As a governor, how would you? What are some things that you could actually do, concrete things that would help a child or help our children to read? We had some horrendous reading scores, 50% level at the are able to read at the to standard. And that's not good, and that's not, we're not different from most people in North Carolina, but that's no excuse for us. We want to do better. Yep. Our school board wants to do better. So what are some things that, as governor, you could do that that our current governor certainly has not?
Yeah, well, listen, look, no need to apologize on these people wanting to run for the chief executive of the state. They need to be vetted. Any politician can give you a shiny 4 or 5 minute speech and then walk out the back door, but these questions are very crucial. The number one thing that you can do, and I think we're on the precipice of it, Doug Ducey was the first to get this done in Arizona last year before he left office, was what we call having the money follow the student, not the system. The reason that that's so important, and I'll try to keep this short and unpack it without getting too much into the weeds, the reason that is so crucial, it forces schools to up their game to make sure that they're meeting these standards when it comes to teaching their children. Because if not, you can take those taxpayer dollars and you can remove your child, put them in a charter school, put them in a private school, or even put them in a better public school that's doing a better job at these fundamentals, specifically in our elementary. And what you're alluding to, if you do not get these essentials done by the time you're in the third or fourth grade, you are playing catch-up the rest of your life. And it's impacting our urban areas, it's impacting our rural areas, and I think as governor, that's one of the things that you can drill down and pinpoint to make sure that we're exposing the light on the failing schools by making sure the money follows the student and not the system.
Well, of course, and by the way, it impacts our black neighbors much more than it does our white neighbors, because we know the statistics tell us 93% of our black graduates cannot get into our own local junior college without having remedial courses. Now, to follow up your answer, at every step of the way, our current Attorney General, Josh Stein, has fought us. Now, Josh Stein, I'm telling no one something that they do not know. Josh Stein, the Attorney General, is supposed to represent we the people in these cases and often goes to court against us in his own friendly lawsuits. Now, we're going to have a, hopefully we'll get a decent conservative attorney general. But meantime, can a governor control an attorney general a little better than that, or is that just completely out of his hands?
Well, no, you can have some influence. The attorney general does have some independent autonomy to be able to make decisions on which courses he pursues or which charges he does not. But the attorney general is an extremely important position, whether it's on the state level or the national level. That's one of the reasons that not a lot of these crimes that I think are to be committed by some of these people in Washington, D.C. are not prosecuted. It's the same thing on the state level. It's very, very important to make sure that we have an attorney general that has the stones to be willing to go after this kind of corruption, whether it's in our local, federal, or state government. Some influence, but the attorney general, that's why it's such an important position.
Well, of course, we know that we were thwarted on voter ID, and it was absolutely ridiculous that one judge could do that, and we got no help from Josh Stein. Let me ask you another question. Very specifically, without any wavering at all, can you tell us how you feel about abortion?
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that. I am what I would call 100% pro-life. I battled that as a pastor for 16 years, long before I got into the political arena. I believe that it's very crucial that we protect the unborn. Those are human beings, they're treasures. But I'll also say this, this is where Republicans can do better. We want to focus on the unborn, but we also have to focus on some of these mothers that are facing incredible odds. Not everybody has the opportunity or the luxury to have a strong consensus supportive group at home. A lot of these young mothers feel like they have no other option. So as governor, I want to make sure that we're providing the resources the best that we can to offer the incentives to make sure that young mother is choosing life as opposed to just focusing on the unborn child. And that's how I've led in my private life. It's how I've led as a pastor. It's how I've led in leadership in the United States Congress. I'm not ashamed of being pro-life, but I also believe that we can be a little bit more sensitive when it comes to dealing with a lot of these unwed mothers who in their mindset, it is a critical crisis point in their life. Let's make sure that we're doing all we can. I know you've got a great pregnancy care center there in Moore County that does a lot of this work. But as governor, we need to shine a light more on these resources that offer the hope, not just to the unborn child, which is important, but also to the mothers who are facing these critical decisions.
I want to remind everybody, we're talking with Mark Walker, who is a candidate for governor, and he'll be facing two other Republicans in the primary, John.
And I'd like to remind you, you're listening to WEEB 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM. And we are very grateful any time a candidate comes on here, especially one that's running for governor and stature of Mark Walker. And we thank you very much for being our guest. Congressman, law enforcement is catching a lot of heat right now. And I'm not going to editorialize. This is your time to speak. Do you support law enforcement?
Absolutely. In fact, in my last election, I'm the only candidate that every sheriff that I've ever represented in Congress, Republican or Democrat, had endorsed us in our previous election. We've had a long-standing relationship. In fact, I'm the guy that went after Barack Obama's assistant attorney general when he targeted the Alamance County Sheriff Terry Johnson, was able to restore his grant money. One of the more rewarding moments in my congressional time. To expose a 7-year fraudulent case they had brought against my friend Sheriff Terry Johnson, who's also endorsed us in this governor's race. My record is pretty strong. I'm very proud to say that, and I don't shy away from it one bit.
There seems to be a feeling now among, especially the Democrats, and you know, especially after some of the rulings that came out of the recent Supreme Court rulings, that somehow we can ignore. President Biden has a right to ignore these rulings by the Supreme Court and rule himself the way he feels that the Constitution should be interpreted. Do you support the absolute rule of law?
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like that's where some of my former colleagues are very much well within their rights to pursue some of these impeachment talks. If you've got a president who's trying to use through executive order, whether it's the most recent one we've seen is trying to override the fact that it's not right for taxpayers to pay off all these student loans or what student forgiveness is what I guess this student loan forgiveness is what this administration would call it. Absolutely, he should be held accountable. Of course, they've got their wagon full right now with all this Hunter Biden situation as well. But any time that there is a violation from one branch, the whole Founding Fathers in their genius was to create these three equal branches. And if one of these branches violate the Constitution, it is well within the rights to hold that person accountable, in this particular case, President Joe Biden.
One of our big debates here in Moore County is this. We have books that have been discovered in our libraries, and I think the leftists would have you believe that they were carefully selected by very well-trained librarians who looked through the books and thought this book should be in there. And the truth is, and it's not hard to verify, that these were just ordered in bulk and these books happened to be in there. And the debate is some of these books are extremely, we would literally be shut down by the FTC if we read parts of these books, and some of them are in elementary schools and some are in middle schools. And the debate is, can we remove these books? Don't we need to have books in school that are completely non-controversial, have no pornographic, or if you don't want to use the word pornographic, have no materials in there that a parent may not want their child to read, and they're not controlled by parents, they cannot be, as nice as that sounds. And that's called book banning by the leftists. I wonder if you would please comment on that.
Yeah, as a former pastor, you might have an idea of where I stand on this. But I will say this. It's one thing just to be upset about it. It's another thing to figure out a plan to be able to get it done. That's why I applaud my former colleague that I served with for 4 years in the U.S. South, Governor Ron DeSantis. He was able to get it done legislatively. He was able to get laws passed that prevented this, which then would hold whether it's teachers or school superintendents, whoever would be responsible, they would then be guilty of breaking the law and then potentially lose their job. Until you put some teeth in it, guys, you're not going to make any progress. Now, we can get out here and jump up and down and go to our wonderful Republican club meetings and talk about the problems, but we've got to talk more about how do we get it done. It's got to be about solutions, not just the speeches, and I think that's where leadership comes into play. Someone that has the ability to lead, and I feel like, not to be too self-adulating, that's our background. I became the first member of Congress at the end of my first term in history to ever be elected chair of the largest caucus of Congress, 160 members. I'm the highest-rated conservative to ever serve in the top four leadership positions in the U.S. House. The reason why is that we have the ability to build these coalitions to make sure that we do more than just talk about the problem, but we actually solve the problem, and that's one of the basis of why we are running for governor.
Well, and of course, Ron DeSantis is catching heat, but he's not catching legitimate heat. He's catching heat from lies that are being told, and that's why it's so important to have someone that will be willing to stand up. That's another thing altogether. You touched on this. In fact, you did more than touch on it, but I would like to bring it up again. Our school board here passed a parents' rights declaration or whatever the correct term is, and there was a great, great, great deal of controversy about it. But all it said was this, simply, that parents will be informed about any action that the parents should be informed about, whether they want to be called a different name or any indication they may be doing something that affects their health. And anything at all involving the child, the parents should be informed. And there was a great ruckus. Folks acted like there would be blood running in the street because parents would kill their children if they found some of these things out. And just absolutely arguments that I would think were ridiculous. I mean, I think we'd have a parent problem with a parent. But parents' rights, parents' absolute right to raise their children, it just seems to be such an important thing for us and for our school board to think the good Lord agrees with it. What do you think about, you've mentioned parents' rights, but how far are you willing to go with this?
You got to go all the way with it, because I will tell you this, and I'm not going to mince words here. The greatness of America is because it was built on the family structure. That's what made America the most exceptional country in the world. There is an attack, there is an evil every single day that is pursuing our families and even today our children. What has shifted in the last decade, gentlemen, is the Democrats, this leftist group, progressive ideology, is no longer hiding in the shadows. It's no longer working behind the scenes. It's now in your face, daring us as Americans to stop it. And I hope and pray to God that it's waking up enough people. Once they come after our children, I don't know what else motivation is needed to be able to engage. I am encouraged to see that more and more people are saying it. I'm seeing these moms step up and these parents step up that they know, not my neighborhood, not my home. But if we don't push back and fight for our children, I don't know what else that we would be willing to stand up on, because this is about losing the next generation to a socialistic, big government mindset that will careen us over. We've already got foreign adversaries. Won't even get into foreign policy stuff today. But this is a hill worth dying on for me.
Without going too far with this, I don't want to sound like some Pharisee who's spraying spit while I'm talking about this, but, you know, Christianity is under attack, and it really is, and it's speaking very calmly and not trying to cause problems. The more you read, the more you understand that Christianity and Christian beliefs not only are being attacked, they're being laughed at and discouraged, to me, this is, Congressman, it's a problem. You spoke of evil. Evil exists. And what's disturbing to me is that it seems like America, and even in our wonderful community, which we love so much, Moore County, eyes are being blinded to the fact that Christianity is under attack and people are trying to turn other people away from God. You and I may try to lead them to Him, but we certainly wouldn't want to turn anyone away from anything. But do you see that Christianity is under attack in America, and does it concern you?
Yeah, it's under attack in every aspect of our culture, whether it's our education, whether it's our politics, whether it's the arts and entertainment. You know, I there have been times I've just walked a little bit through D.C. and the different buildings where Scripture is and is carved into the stones, into the images there of what this country was founded on, the Judeo-Christian principles. And here's the thing, evil and Christianity cannot exist in the same circle or the same arena. So that's the constant struggle that it is today. And you have a warring faction from the left that wants to exalt man as God. And that's where the friction that we have in this 21st century, the continual erosion of our principles. And we can camp there for a while, we certainly can, but I want to make sure that we're driving the point home. Yes, we all can identify the issues. We all can identify the problem. But who is the leader that in North Carolina can step and push back, that has the ability, the conservative track record, and the opportunity to be able to turn this tide around? And one of the ways that we do that is not just pointing the finger all the time, but is going to places and going to communities where, frankly, they don't understand or have heard the message of individualism or free markets or even the Judeo-Christian principles we're talking about. And that's why it's very important that we take a look at this race, because a state has more authority than what we have realized in the past. And that's what some of these governors, like my friend Kristi Noem and others that I've served with, can push back on the federal government. This is one of those areas that we can lead on.
We've only got a minute left, but I do want to get this comment in by a listener. This listener talked about reading by the third grade and how important that is, and you brought it up. They say, quote, Josh Stein went to an elite high school, Ivy League college, and Ivy League law school, but he would condemn the poor to stay in low-performing schools. Congressman, you've got about 30 seconds. I wish I'd given you more, but say anything you want, please.
Yeah, Josh Stein, it's very important that we defeat him. He is a believer. He's not like a Roy Cooper that can just be pushed by the progressive. This guy wants to lead that movement. It's very important. That's why I'm asking people to pray about this vote. We've got 6 or 7 months to make the case on why we are the strongest candidate to beat Josh Stein and turn this state back to the direction that it needs to go.
Okay, Congressman, I can't thank you enough. I hope we'll be able to have you on again, and we'll see you next time you come to Moore County. Hope you have a wonderful day.
Look forward to seeing you soon. God bless.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye. It is so it goes for this Wednesday. Have yourself a great, safe day. We'll see you back bright and early tomorrow, 7 to 9, for a something Thursday morning with the Leader Man. Until then, be sure to support all the mom and pop businesses you hear on our airwaves, because they're the backbone of our economy here. They're the core that keeps us together. So you need to give them first crack at your spending dollars, please. And if you want to have a successful business, well, why not consider talk radio as part of your advertising package? It is the most powerful form of advertising there is. Give us a call and we'll show you why. All right, that's it for me, the Leader Man, and Nick and Colt the Dog. We'll all see you this afternoon at 2 at the Dog Park.